stared at the empty space in confusion. There were a few weapons, like electro staffs, that could block a lightsaber, but he'd never before had the weapon simply shut down. The droids were still bringing up their wrist blasters. Igniting the lightsaber again, Anakin slashed a second time. Again, the blade disappeared before it could do more than leave a scratch on the droid's metallic skin. There was no time to figure out what was going on. The wrist blasters were almost on target. Stretching out to the Force, Anakin leapt up and over the top of one of the droids, landing 5 meters away and again igniting his lightsaber. They turned to face him, their arms swinging around. The first to get his blasters lined up fired. Double vision. Bolts coming at torso, at torso. Anakin swung the blade around, catching the two shots and bouncing them into the walls. At least that still worked. He dodged to the side as the second droid came on target and added its blaster fire to the first's. Double vision. Bolts coming at torso, at head, at torso, at torso. Letting the precognition and the Force guide his hands, Anakin deflected the salvo as he tried to think. All right. Somehow, something about the B2's armor was able to shut down his lightsaber. But maybe whatever it was wasn't so good at blocking blaster bolts. Time to find out. Double vision. Multiple bolts coming at torso, torso, head, torso, 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 head. Again, Anakin blocked the salvo. Only this time, instead of sending the shots across the room, he turned them straight back at his attackers. No good. The impacts looked strange. The bolts hitting with a sort of shimmering splash instead of just digging into the surface. But there was no damage he could see. Certainly the droids weren't slowing down. The blaster bolts were coming faster now as all three B2s came on target. Anakin dodged to the right, still blocking the shots. A pair of shots angled down from above as Padme opened up with her S5, her attacks leaving the same odd splash and the same lack of damage. Anakin continued to dodge, deflecting the bolts, trying to think. Blaster bolts didn't affect Solha's new brand of B2s. That was bad enough. But the fact that they could somehow shut down lightsabers was far worse. But the droids had to have some vulnerability. If they couldn't be stopped, then the Separatists had won. Anakin wouldn't accept that. He dodged again, leaping left this time, watching the droids' slitted eyes as they again tracked their blasters toward him. Their blasters! It was a slim chance, he knew. Not to mention a nearly impossible shot to make. Right now, it was all he had. Unfortunately, it would also require him to get a lot closer to at least one of his attackers. He dodged left again, still blocking their shots, then leapt up and over the droids, spinning in midair and landing again on the control table. Directly behind the motionless B2, still wired into the console. The 5 techs, he noted, had wisely fled the combat area. Anakin's 3 attackers turned again toward him. But now, with Anakin partly shielded behind the blank B2, only one of them could bring its blasters to bear. It swung into range. Double vision. A blaster bolt at his torso. Anakin crouched down, putting his eyes on a level with the droid's wrist. And as the bolt screamed across the gap at him, he slashed his lightsaber across it, sending it directly back into the blaster's muzzle. The pop of the impact was surprisingly quiet, but the result was all he could have hoped for. The entire wrist blaster shattered, sending a shower of small pieces cascading onto the floor. The droid itself didn't seem to notice, but continued striding forward, its arm extended as if its blaster was still spitting death toward its target. Double vision. Bolts coming from the other two droids at torso, at head. Anakin deflected and dodged, again doing his best to keep the stationary B2 between him and the still functional attackers. Only now, it suddenly occurred to him he had 2 shields available. Bouncing the latest salvo back toward the attacker's blasters, missing with all of them, he leapt in front of the droid still trying to attack with its shattered weapon. The B-2 loomed over him, its wrist blaster nearly bumping up against his chest. And on sudden impulse, Anakin stabbed the tip of his lightsaber blade directly into the droid's right photoreceptor eye. There were clone troopers in his 501st who claimed to have taken down B-2s by shooting them in the eye. Anakin had never quite known whether those stories fell into the category of fact, boast, or wishful thinking. Now, for the first time, he knew that the stories could at least be true. Because he'd just done it. The B-2 staggered back like a brawler punched in the jaw. Anakin twisted his wrists, hoping to slice further through the head and destroy more of the droid's processor. Once again, as the blade hit the edges of the eye socket, the lightsaber shut down. Anakin took a long step backward as the droid's knees buckled and it pitched forward to crash onto the floor. Double vision. Bolts coming at torso, at head, at torso. Anakin swung around, igniting his lightsaber again as the other B-2s came around the obstacles and back into range. One down, two to go. He moved to his right, getting into position to once again leap into the shadow of the blank B-2, where he could hopefully take the remaining droids one at a time. He was three steps away from making his move when a lightning bolt ripped down from Padme's level directly into one of the droids. The effect was startling and vaguely comedic. Instead of merely falling over, the B-2's arms and legs snapped straight out to both sides, turning the droid into a bizarre caricature of a child making a sand angel. It held that pose for a second before, overbalanced, it toppled to the floor. It was still falling when a second lightning bolt blasted through the air, turning the last B-2 into its own sand angel and dropping it to the floor. For a moment, Anakin just stared at the droids, the acrid smell of burnt plastoid curling his nostrils. Then he looked up. Padme was standing at the edge of the second-level platform, her S5 held loosely in two-handed sharpshooter stance, her mouth hanging slightly open in astonishment at the sight laid out below her. Two steps behind her, and to the side, stood Thrawn, holding a long, shoulder-slung rifle in the crook of his arm. As Anakin watched, the Chiss stepped forward, slinging the rifle behind his back, and casually plucked the S5 from Padme's hands. He hooked the grapple around a nearby bracing strut, stepped off the platform, and dropped smoothly to the floor below. Resetting the ascension mode, he sent the blaster back up. "Well done," he said, walking toward Anakin, his glowing red eyes looking back and forth. "Interesting variant on the Separatists' usual combat machines." "Glad you enjoyed the show," Anakin said, eyeing the unfamiliar weapon as the other stopped in front of him. "Thanks for the assist. Next time, feel free to join the fight sooner." "If I had, you wouldn't have learned how to defeat them," Thrawn pointed out. "Besides, this particular weapon carries only 3 shots. Anakin felt his lip twitch. So the Chiss could have taken out all 3 B-2s. Instead, he'd held back while Anakin ran around like crazy, trying not to get his head blown off. Still, he had to admit that Thrawn had a point. If this whole factory was geared to making more of these invulnerable droids, the Republic needed to know how to fight them. "Well, thanks anyway," he nodded at the droid he'd taken down. "You have any idea how they're doing this?"
"I have a thought," Thrawn said. "Let us examine the bins."
Padme caught up with them on the way.
"I thought you were leaving,"
she said to Thrawn, her eyes hostile, her voice not sure whether to be angry, relieved, or some combination of the two.
"I never said I was leaving," Thrawn told her calmly. "I merely said that I'd been sent for the shield generator, and that my first duty was to my people. Once that duty was fulfilled, I was free to return to General Skywalker's aid."
"Hey!" a voice called from the side. Reflexively, Anakin spun around, igniting his lightsaber. peripherally aware that Thrawn had swung his own weapon back up to firing position. A big man was coming toward them from the direction of the first-level door. A battle droid's E-5 blaster rifle gripped in his hands. He jerked to a halt, his eyes widening as he saw the lightsaber blade.
"Whoa!"
he said, stooping down hastily and dropping the E-5 to the floor.
"It's okay," Padme said quickly. "That's Leb Jow. He's been helping me."
"What do you want?"
Anakin asked, glaring at the intruder over the pulsing blade. Generally, he trusted Padme's judgment, but the man had charged in on them without warning while carrying a separatist weapon.
"I got everyone moving, like she said,"
Leb Jow said, his eyes seemingly locked on the lightsaber.
"I just thought she might need me, that's all."
"I promised him and his friends some reward money if they didn't hand me over to Duke Solha,"
Padme added.
"Is the payment of ransom for ambassadors a common practice in the Republic?"
Thrawn asked. Leb Jow's eyes widened a little more.
"Ambassador? You didn't say you were an ambassador!"
"Don't worry about it," Anakin said. "Those!"
He pointed at the group of techs still cowering beside the row of B2 blanks.
"They're still here. Get rid of them."
"Sure,"
Leb Jow beckoned to the techs.
"You heard the man, Vipki. Let's go. I said let's go!"
Silently, the techs unglued themselves from the wall and headed across the room. Their expressions, Anakin noted, ran from nervous to frightened to angry.
"Frost you,"
one of them muttered, glaring balefully as he passed Anakin.
"You've ruined everything."
"Move it,"
Leb Jow growled. Still watching Anakin, he stooped and gingerly picked up the blaster again. The last tech passed him, and he fell in behind them, holding the blaster at the ready. Thrawn set off again toward the bins, Anakin and Padme behind him.
"You know, we could have asked them about the droids,"
Padme said quietly.
"Yeah, we could have,"
Anakin agreed.
"Didn't really want them around." "Okay, Thrawn, let's hear it."
"An experiment."
Thrawn pointed to the bin with fibrous material.
"Touch your lightsaber blade to this."
Anakin did so. Once again, the blade instantly vanished.
"The material is called cortosis,"
the Chiss said.
"It's very rare. I've heard stories about it, but never seen any. It's rumored to have unusually high energy absorption and transmission coefficients, to the point where many energy weapon blasts will be dissipated along the fibers without damaging the fibers themselves."
"That's why the blaster shots didn't hurt it,"
Padme murmured.
"Yes,"
Thrawn said.
"It's also soft and frangible, useless for building into armor or other protective materials."
"Solha seems to have solved that problem,"
Anakin said.
"Indeed," Thrawn said. "It appears they've found a method for weaving the cortosis into a network within a protective matrix. An energy impact is therefore dissipated across the entire network and throughout the entire droid armor shell."
"They've covered the walls with it, too,"
Padme said.
"The blaster bolts you deflected did the same sunburst thing as the ones you sent into the B2s.
I imagine it took considerable experimentation to learn how to use a minimal amount of cortosis while still weaving it into a pattern where each fiber touches at least one of the others,"
Thrawn said.
"It would appear they used their failures to add extra protection to their factory."
"So blasters won't work unless you give a really massive jolt?"
Anakin said, looking over at the two Sand Angel droids Thrawn had taken out with his lightning gun.
"Or perhaps a very specific jolt,"
Thrawn said.
"A blaster shot is a single energy pulse, which can be dissipated throughout the matrix. The arc cannon delivers a prolonged energy profile that overloads even the cortosis's ability to dissipate.
Not to mention putting a massive charge on the skin so that the limbs repel each other,"
Padme pointed out.
"That's a nice touch."
"Completely unexpected, I assure you," Thrawn said. "The side effects of combat can be unpredictable."
So what's the deal with my lightsaber?
Anakin asked.
It delivers a prolonged energy profile, too.
There, I can only speculate, as the stories of Cortosis include no such weapons,
Thrawn said.
But I suspect it's analogous to the functioning of a superconductor. Most such materials can be overloaded by a sufficiently large surge. The far sharper energy gradient at the edge of the lightsaber blade may momentarily block the cortosis effect, sending the energy bouncing back into the blade. There must be something in the return profile that causes the mechanism to shut down.
That doesn't make any sense, Anakin insisted. I can bounce against another lightsaber blade without anything like that happening.
Thrawn shook his head.
As I say, I can only speculate. But certainly the ability to block lightsabers would be of paramount importance to the Separatists.
That it would,
Anakin agreed heavily, igniting the blade again. It looked, felt, and sounded exactly as it usually did.
So what we need to do is destroy all this.
He waved to the cortosis bin.
So they can't make more of these super battle droids.
You could do that,
Thrawn agreed.
But there may be more of the material available that we have no access to.
There's also a mine,
Padme said.
That's where they're getting it.
Then we have to shut that down too,
Anakin said impatiently.
So let's get started.
A moment, Thrawn said.
His glowing eyes narrowed in thought.
Instead of attempting to shut down the factory, a better solution might be to let them waste their time and resources on a lethally flawed project.
Anakin glanced at Padme. She looked as puzzled as he felt.
And how do you propose we do that?
We have the assembly line control systems available to us,
Thrawn said, pointing to the control table.
We have your astromech droid. Why not reprogram the war droids for failure?
You mean leave some spots open, so blaster bolts can get in?
Padme asked.
Won't they notice that?
I suggest something more subtle,
Thrawn said.
The mesh encompasses nearly all of the droid's surface. We can merely extend it slightly by adding a few threads across the discharge capacitor within the blaster emission cylinders.
Anakin frowned.
And then he got it.
So that every time it fires, it'll send a burst of energy of its own into the system?
Exactly,
Thrawn said.
If we also reroute some of the inner mesh threads to lie closer to the control processor?
Then the more it fires, the faster it fries its own brain,
Padme said, a cautious excitement creeping into her voice.
Only it'll do it slowly enough that they won't notice. It'll look fine and pass all the tests.
And then 5 minutes into combat, it'll start falling apart,
Anakin said.
Sounds like a plan. Let's plug R2 in and see what he can do.
Standard Republic protocol called for astromech droids to be memory wiped after every mission, lest a Separatist capture offer the enemy a treasure trove of classified information. Anakin had routinely ignored that order, despite the trouble it had occasionally gotten him into with both military leadership and the Jedi Council. But as a result, R2-D2 still had the stray bits and pieces of data and procedure that he'd picked up over the years. One of those bits of procedure involved factory architecture and graphic rewriting.
Okay, he's on it,
Anakin said, as the droid warbled his confirmation.
Any other suggestions?
Only that he hurry,
Thrawn said, cocking his head.
My pilot's diversionary attack has ended. They may return at any minute.
I thought you said you weren't bringing your ship,
Anakin said, focusing on the sounds around them. Sure enough, the rhythmic thudding from earlier had stopped.
I said I didn't wish to arrive with it,
Thrawn reminded him.
We may need to create a diversion to permit Ambassador Padme and the droid to complete their task.
Lepjow said they did the cortosis sifting and sorting in the west end of the north wing,
Padme said.
Then they took it to the eastern north wing, and here to the east wing.
They're making unstoppable B-2s here,
Anakin said.
Any idea what they're making in the North Wing?
He didn't say. He probably doesn't know.
Anakin cocked an eyebrow at Thrawn.
You feel like finding out?
It would be as good a place as any for a diversion,
Thrawn said. Anakin suppressed a grimace as he headed across the floor toward the wing's northern door. With his real mission now completed, had the Chiss lost interest in what else the Separatists might be doing here? It didn't matter. Anakin still cared. More to the point, if Thrawn had really sent his ship away, their borrowed freighter was still the Chiss's only way off Mokivja. And he didn't just need the freighter. He needed Anakin. The only reason for Thrawn to have a pilot was if he couldn't fly a ship himself. Interested or not, he would still have to tag along.
Fine, Anakin said. I'll take point. Try to keep up.
As Padme had pointed out, the walls were at least partially immune to lightsabers. Fortunately, the door leading to the North Wing wasn't. As she watched from the control desk, Anakin carefully sliced through the lock and hinges. A wave of his hand, and the heavy panel floated back out of the doorway. Anakin and Thrawn stepped through. Anakin with his lightsaber ready, Thrawn with his lightning gun still slung over his back. Padme watched as they disappeared from view, her mind churning with mixed feelings. She was glad that Thrawn had come back, especially given that Anakin might well be dead if he hadn't. But the fact that he'd apparently been perfectly willing to abandon them once he had what he needed still rankled. Maybe that wasn't unreasonable. Maybe in his place, she would do the same. Maybe what really troubled her was his suggestion that the Republic and Separatists all played by those same rules. Because she'd seen that happen all too many times. Diplomats, senators, governors, entire planetary systems. The minute they got what they wanted, they were gone, without a single thought for anyone else. Was that how it always was? A movement caught her eye. The door Anakin had just gotten rid of was being set up back in the opening. Just before it blocked Padme's view, she had a glimpse of Anakin on the other side, an annoyed set to his mouth. Which probably meant that putting the door back up had been Thrawn's idea, not his. Padme smiled. Anakin had never been one to take orders graciously. Some days even good suggestions were pushing it. R2-D2 beeped.
You're in? Padme asked, looking down at him. How long?
The droid warbled an estimate. 10 to 15 more minutes.
Good, Padme said. That should give Anakin and Thrawn enough time to figure out what Solha was doing in that wing.
Hopefully they could find a fix as clever as Thrawn's plan for the B-2s. She reached up and gently touched the super battle droid's arm. It felt a little warmer than the usual metal armoring, but aside from that, not much difference. At least now she knew why the Separatists had set up their droid factory here, instead of just shipping the Cortosas somewhere else in their territory. A captured ship carrying an unknown material would spark suspicion and investigation. A captured ship carrying super battle droids wouldn't even raise any eyebrows, but would merely be sent somewhere to have its cargo crushed or dismantled. Odds were the workers or droids handling that task would never even notice anything unusual about them. Without warning, the B-2 twitched. Padme jerked her hand back.
R2, she breathed. You did shut down the data transfer, right?
She wasn't sure she completely understood the little astromech's response, but it sounded like the transfer had already been completed, and the B-2 was simply waiting on its internal processor to sort the data and set up the internal programming.
How long?
She asked. The answer was almost inevitable. 10 to 15 minutes.
Great, she muttered, looking up at the big droid. Work fast, R2.
He gave a slightly snooty beep. Of course he was working at top speed.
Right,
Padme said, smiling. No matter what danger might be threatening, despite being in the middle of chaos, R2-D2 just kept on doing what he had to do. It was a lesson a lot of people she knew could benefit from. She looked over at the row of B2s still standing along the walls. Thrawn's bit of sleight of hand, almost literally, it belatedly occurred to her, would hopefully work for any future battle droids. But those 8 finished ones could give the Republic forces serious trouble if they got out. Maybe there was a way she could sabotage them, or at least mark them so that the clones and Jedi could see them coming. Leaving R2-D2 at his task, she crossed to the B2s. She studied their torsos, wondering if she dared put scratch marks on them.
"Hello, Jedi,"
a calm voice came from across the room. Padme stiffened, resisting the urge to go for one of her blasters. From the direction of the voice, he'd probably come in through the south door. From the sound of his footsteps, he was walking casually toward her. If he had his own weapon ready, and he undoubtedly did, she would never get into position to take a shot before he nailed her. She frowned. One set of footsteps. More important, one set of footsteps not accompanied by any of the distinctive muffled clanking of battle droids. Had he actually come alone? "Good evening," she called back, thinking fast. Anakin had said Duke Solhaw was in charge of this operation, and that was definitely a Serenian accent. But facing down a Jedi alone seemed beyond even the famous cultural arrogance of Serenian nobility. On top of that, there was something wrong with his voice. Padme frowned.
"I see you're admiring my handiwork,"
the voice continued, the footsteps still continuing in her direction.
"Be good, and I'll tell you..."
Abruptly, the footsteps faltered.
"What the..."
Padme smiled tightly.
"I gather you've noticed my handiwork?" she countered.
She turned around and caught her breath. The puzzle of his odd voice, at least, was now answered. Instead of the nobleman she'd seen from her hidden perch in the West Wing, a man dressed in elegant Serenian tunic and cloak, she found herself facing a fully armored clone trooper. He was holding a blaster rifle on her. Not the Republic's standard-issue DC-15, oddly enough, but a battle droid's E-5. But his helmet was turned to the side, toward the 3 B-2s Anakin and Thrawn had destroyed.
"Impossible,"
he said, as if talking to himself.
"They assured me..." "Ah,"
he said, the confusion suddenly gone from his voice.
"Very clever. Where did you find an arc cannon to use against them?"
"I'm very resourceful," Padme said. "So he knew Thrawn's lightning gun could take out the droids? Interesting. Invulnerable battle droids. Very impressive."
His head jerked back toward her and leaned forward as if peering at her face.
"Senator Amidala?"
"Yes," Padme said. "Duke Solhaw?"
For a moment, the figure hesitated. Then, keeping his grip on his E-5, he lifted both hands and awkwardly pulled off his helmet. It was the Duke, all right, but not quite as she remembered him. Whereas the old Solhaw had had the look of someone whose ambitions and desires had been thwarted at every pass, this new Solhaw's eyes and face were on fire, brimming with hope and purpose and anticipation.
"So, you remember me," Solhaw said. "I'm impressed. So many in the Republic and Senate thought of me as a joke, or didn't notice me at all."
"That's not true," Padme said carefully.
Solhaw was clearly working with Dooku, but in any such alliance, there was always a chance of persuading someone to change sides. She needed to stall him another few moments anyway. She might as well use that time to try to sow a few seeds of doubt.
"You were seen as one of the quieter but more solid supporters of justice and order."
"When they remembered my name, you mean?" Solhaw scoffed. "Well, that will change. After the final Confederacy victory, everyone will know my name."
"I'm sure they will," Padme assured him.
"I should warn you, though,
The Dooku has promised victory any number of times, and somehow the Republic still manages to survive.
I hope you'll remember that boast while you await trial for crimes against the Confederacy,
Soha said.
Once Dooku has an army of these droids,
he smiled slyly,
plus a couple of other surprises, your precious Grand Army will be doomed. If you're lucky, maybe the Count will allow the Republic to continue to exist. If not...
He shrugged again.
Either way, I imagine the most bothersome members of the government will be eliminated.
So I would assume,
Padme agreed, throwing a surreptitious look at the south door. Still no sign of any droids. What was Soha waiting for?
Though, as a professional politician, I have to tell you that raising the level of your threats at this point really isn't productive.
Apparently, the glance hadn't been surreptitious enough.
If you're waiting for my siblings and my droids to make their appearance, you're looking in the wrong direction,
Soha said.
Some are still in the courtyard, making sure the stolen freighter your friends arrived on won't be flying again. At least not any time soon. The others,
he gave her an evil smile,
are even now making their way through the North Wing. Once they've dealt with your friends, they'll be coming through the other door over there.
He broke off, sudden understanding on his face.
Of course, he said. Skywalker! I thought that freighter thief seemed familiar, but I couldn't place the face. Oh, that's unfortunate.
Why? Because you've lost?
Padme suggested.
Because I can offer you good terms if you surrender right now.
No, no, Soha said. It's unfortunate,
because it means a great hero of the Republic will die here, unnoticed,
with no one ever knowing what happened to him.
His face hardened.
As, of course, will you.
Chapter 19.
The factory area in the North Wing wasn't so much an assembly line as it was an artisan studio. Smaller, more crowded with tables, and filling only a single floor. But the work being done there was very familiar.
So that's why Soha was wearing clone trooper armor, Anakin said, as he and Thrawn stood beside a section of the assembly table. They've got the same system going here as with the B-2s.
Yes, Thrawn murmured. This is a puzzle, General.
How so?
You've stated that the battle droids being created in the East Wing fight for the Separatists, Thrawn said. Yet this armor is worn by the clone troopers who fight for the Republic. Why would the Separatists want lightsaber-resistant armor for their enemies?
That's obvious enough, Anakin told him grimly. Dooku must be planning a massive infiltration of the Republic forces.
He nodded at the rows of completed armor lined up on hooks along the center of the room.
In fact, right now he's got almost enough to run roughshod over the whole Senate district.
The Separatists also have human soldiers. They have enough to fill this many suits, Anakin said.
In fact, that's probably why Dooku has Soha running the factory in the first place. A Serenian-run operation, with Serenian troops in the armor, and Dooku will have first crack at the best Coruscant has to offer once he's taken down the Senate.
And eliminated the Jedi as well,
Thrawn suggested.
They're the only ones in the Republic who use lightsabers, are they not?
They are,
Anakin confirmed, his throat tightening.
You're right. Armor like this would be perfect for attacking the Jedi Temple. If Dooku could destroy the Jedi and the Senate, and maybe capture Chancellor Palpatine,
he broke off, as a sudden emotional flood rolled over him.
Padme's in trouble, he said, turning and starting toward the door.
He stopped in mid-stride as Thrawn grabbed his arm.
No. Let go!
Anakin said, snapping his arm free of the Chiss's grip. Thrawn countered by half-turning and getting a fresh grip on Anakin's collar with the other hand.
I said let go.
You cannot, Thrawn said firmly. This is the danger to your Republic. This is where you must focus your efforts.
We'll reprogram this factory like R2's doing to the other one, Anakin said, snapping up his arm, aiming his forearm at Thrawn's wrist to try to break the other's grasp.
Thrawn countered by letting go just as Anakin's arm swung harmlessly past, then reacquiring his grip.
Stop it, damn you! She's going to die!
We can't reprogram here, Thrawn said. Clone troopers don't have the droid's built-in weaponry.
I can't abandon her!
We won't, Thrawn promised. But your mission, your true mission, must come first.
My true mission is Padme,
Anakin wanted to snarl. But again, he couldn't. Thrawn didn't know the truth, and Anakin didn't dare tell him. And down deep, he knew the Chiss was right. There was little point in rescuing his wife here, only to see her executed in a separatist purge after Coruscant's fall.
You have a plan?
Yes, Thrawn said. Let's see if our opponents will allow us sufficient time.
I'm sure you'll try your best,
Padme said, forcing her voice to stay calm. If the rest of Solha's B-2s were as invulnerable as the three Anakin and Thrawn had already tangled with, her husband was in deadly danger. Behind him, R2-D2's dome swiveled to face her. And suddenly, she realized something that hadn't occurred to her. The way the control table was positioned, Solha wouldn't have seen R2-D2's data arm on his walk across the room. More important, he wouldn't have been able to see that the arm was plugged into the data socket. But he would see it now if he simply turned around. At all costs, Padme had to keep him from doing that.
Why don't you tell me about Dooku's grand scheme? She asked. I seem to remember Serenian custom permitting a condemned prisoner a last request.
Such dramatic, Senator, Solha chided. Really? I'd tell you if I could, but I believe the Count is still working out the details.
Ah,
Padme said dryly. Right. The Count Dooku, she knew, would have the whole thing planned down to the centimeter and millisecond by now. Odds were that he did, and that Solha simply wasn't important enough for such information.
But really, the plan should be obvious, Solha continued. Invulnerable battle droids to destroy your clone armies?
With a clank, the B-2 beside R2-D2 abruptly came to life. Solha half-turned toward it. Snatching out her S-5, Padme aimed at the left side of Solha's lower ribs, a shot that should get his attention without seriously injuring him, and fired. The bolt blazed into the edge of his chest plate and disappeared. Solha jerked back around to face her, a startled look on his face.
You shot me!
Padme fired again, more toward the center of his chest this time. Again, there was no effect. But this time, she spotted the distinctive sunburst effect. Like the B-2s, Solha's armor was wreathed in cortosis fibers.
So much for a civilized conversation,
Solha snarled, his casual arrogance gone. Slipping his helmet back on over his head, he spread his arms wide to both sides.
Go ahead, take your best shot. Then maybe you'll accept the fact that the Republic is doomed.
Padme glanced past his shoulder to see R2-D2 withdraw his data arm from the console. The reprogramming was finished. Time to get out of here.
If you insist,
she said, focusing on Solha again. She sent a final blaster bolt at him, this one sunbursting off his helmet, again with no damage. Thumbing the S5 selector switch, she braced herself and fired her last grapple squarely between his eyes. The impact snapped his head back, staggering him backward as he fought for balance. Padme rushed forward, reeling in the grapple as she ran. Solha recovered his stance and started to swing his E5 back toward her, and fell flat on his back as she again slammed the grapple into his helmet. Reeling it in again, she reached him and kicked the blaster out of his hand. He grabbed at her ankle, started to pull himself to his feet. She slammed the grapple off his faceplate one final time, bouncing the back of his helmet against the floor. This time he collapsed and lay still. "Come on," she said, beckoning to R2-D2 as she turned and ran toward the north door. Solha's brother and sister were out there somewhere, and Anakin and Thrawn didn't know their clone armor was as invulnerable as the B-2's. They were halfway to the door when Padme heard the Woken super battle droid stir behind them. It made a strange sound deep within itself and began lumbering its way toward them.
"Feel it completely," Thrawn said.
Anakin blinked, looking at the clone trooper helmet in his hands. It was indeed only half full.
"Right," he said, dipping it into the cortosis bin again, his full focus on the sensations coming to him from the east wing.
Padme was still alive, still unhurt, and her anxiety level was back under control, but that was all he could see. He desperately wanted to hand the rest of the prep work to Thrawn and rush to her aid. But he couldn't. Thrawn was right. They had to beat this thing right here and right now, or the Republic would be in deadly danger. And already, he could hear the sounds of approaching droids from the western end of the North Wing. He and the Chiss were running out of time. "You sure this will work?" he asked, as he set the helmet on the floor with the others.
"I'm certain of nothing," Thrawn admitted. "Stories and legends are useful for gauging a culture, but aren't always reliable sources of tactical data. Yet from what I've seen, I believe this has a good chance of success."
"Well, if it doesn't, I'll never let you hear the end of it," Anakin said.
The sounds of droid feet were getting closer. There was a sudden thud from behind them. He spun around, drawing and igniting his lightsaber in a single motion. To his relief, it was Padme, with R2-D2 jetting his way through the air right behind her.
"Padme!" he called.
She turned toward his voice, her stride faltering for a split second at the sight of him and Thrawn encased in their new clone trooper armor, then hurried toward him.
"The other B-2!" she called tensely. "It's right behind me!"
Anakin hissed between his teeth. An invulnerable B-2 behind, an unknown number of battle droids in front. Great.
"I'll take care of him," he said, starting toward her.
"Wait," Thrawn called after him. "You must disable the droid in such a way that you block the door."
"Don't worry, none of the other blanks have been activated," Padme said.
"The blockage is for us," Thrawn said. "They must not wonder afterward why we didn't return to that chamber and destroy it."
Yeah, got it,"
Anakin said impatiently. Unfortunately, even a hulking super battle droid wouldn't fully fill the whole doorway.
"Suggestions? Try to spread eagle it, as I did the two with my arc cannon," Thrawn said.
"Why don't you do it?"
Padme asked.
"You still have one shot, right?"
"We need that here," Anakin said, thinking fast. "Okay, I'll get it. Padme, stay here and give him a hand. We're filling as many helmets with cortosis as we can. R2, you're with me."
"And don't let the B-2 see your lightsaber,"
Padme called after him.
"Okay,"
Anakin said. Prying back the top of his chest plate, he dropped the weapon between his chest and the armor, and sprinted toward the doorway, feeling decidedly awkward and more than a little claustrophobic. He normally fought with only minimal armor, as Thrawn had already noted, and with his arms and legs free to move. Going into battle fully encased this way was a new experience, and not a particularly pleasant one. A screwdriver lying on the floor a few meters away caught his eye, and he used the force to draw it to his hand. A couple of quick instructions to R2-D2. The little droid warbled a warning.
"Right,"
Anakin said, slipping on the helmet. And now he felt awkward, claustrophobic, and blind. Great. B-2s weren't terrifically fast, fortunately, and the battle droid was still a few paces away when Anakin and R2-D2 reached the doorway. The B-2 caught sight of Anakin and stopped, raising its wrist blaster.
"Identify,"
it demanded in a flat voice. Anakin smiled inside his helmet. So that was what Padme had meant. The three Serenians were also in clone armor, and they probably hadn't had time to work out a proper ID code system with their droids. As long as the B-2 didn't see his lightsaber, it couldn't tell he wasn't one of its masters.
"Duke Soha,"
he said, just to see what it would do. The B-2 paused, thinking, or else confused.
"R2,"
Anakin murmured, nodding toward the droid. R2-D2 twittered and rolled forward, gunning his little wheels for all they were worth. He reached top speed and kept going, and rammed straight into the B-2's legs. Given the difference in size and weight, Anakin hadn't expected the astromech to topple the battle droid. Sure enough, the B-2 staggered with the impact, but stayed on its feet. It looked down as if amazed by R2-D2's sheer impudence, and Anakin took advantage of the distraction to reach up and drive the end of the screwdriver into the wall just above the door lintel, using force strength to shove it through the ceramic nearly handle deep. The B-2 swept its left arm down, shoving R2-D2 off to the side, and started toward the doorway again. Anakin backed up a couple of steps, then reversed direction, running forward toward the droid. He reached the doorway and jumped up, catching hold of the screwdriver and using the pivot point to swing himself forward. He shoved off the screwdriver, arced briefly through the air, and slammed feet first into the B-2's torso. The battle droid nearly fell over that time, barely managing to maintain its balance. Anakin landed on his back on the floor and scrambled to his feet. Double vision. Shot coming at torso. Just as the B-2 fired its wrist blaster at full power into his chest. Anakin jerked back, feeling a warm glow spread rapidly from his chest to envelop his whole body. The droid fired again as Anakin backed through the doorway. This time the glow was almost painfully warm. Even Cortosis, apparently, had its limits. The B-2, its balance now restored, started forward again, its blaster tracking Anakin's chest. Behind the droid, apparently unnoticed, R2-D2 was coming up, preparing for another run at its legs. Anakin watched the B-2, judging his timing.
"Now, R2!
He snapped, and again charged forward. In general, B-2s weren't very bright, but this one was perhaps smarter than most. More important, it had already had a taste of its opponent's preferred mode of attack. Even as Anakin sprinted forward, it reached the doorway and stretched its arms out to both sides, bracing itself against the jams for the coming impact. Behind it, R2-D2 trilled a sort of battle cry and increased his speed. The B-2 responded by splaying its legs to both sides, bracing its feet against the doorway as well, in preparation for the little astromech's attack, thereby putting itself in exactly the position Thrawn had requested. Jumping up to the screwdriver, Anakin grabbed it with his left hand and slammed his feet against the B-2's torso. His arms and legs braced, the droid didn't even quiver. Still holding onto the screwdriver, his feet braced against the B-2's torso, Anakin yanked off his chest plate with his right hand, grabbing his lightsaber before it could fall. He jammed the end up against the droid's right eye and ignited the blade. A shudder ran through the B-2's frame. The reaction passed, and the droid seemed to sag in place. For a second, Anakin thought it would fall, but it had braced itself too well and remained upright in the doorway, sealing it from any approach, just as Thrawn had wanted. Sealing it, unfortunately, with R2-D2 trapped on the other side. Anakin's satisfied smile vanished.
"R2?
He called tentatively. The droid gave an exasperated grunt.
"Yeah, sorry,"
Anakin said, dropping back to the floor.
"Hang on, I'll get you out of there."
"Anakin!" Padme called urgently. "They're coming!"
"Correction. They've arrived," Thrawn added coolly.
Anakin looked back. a door leading into the western half of the north wing had opened, and a line of B-1 battle droids was filing in, their blasters held high, their heads moving back and forth as they searched for a target. Behind them, visible above the crowd, were 7 B-2s. He winced. And if all 7 were the indestructible type...
There!
One of the B-1s called, leveling its blaster at Anakin.
You! Stop for questioning!
Don't shoot!
Anakin called, starting toward them with his hands behind his head, his lightsaber concealed from their view. The lead B-1s had passed the row of 9 Cortosis-filled helmets, possibly oblivious to their presence, certainly unaware of their significance. All he had to do now was stall them long enough for all the B-2s to clear the doorway. He grimaced. 9 helmets, 7 B-2s. This could get tricky. The droids were still moving forward. Half the B-1s focused on Anakin, the other half continuing their visual sweep to both sides. The B-2s were still behind them, their arms raised, their wrist blasters also sweeping the room. All of the super battle droids were inside now, with another squad of B-1s bringing up the rear. Without warning, a blaster bolt sizzled across the room to slam into one of the B-2s. Instantly, the droids turned, swiveling their weapons toward the shooter. But before they could fire, a second bolt came at them from the other side of the room, this one splashing off a different B-2. Splashing. Anakin smiled tightly. Of course. Padme and Thrawn were targeting the B-2s in order, watching for the telltale sign of Cortosis armor. The droids were returning fire now, but the attacking blaster bolts were still coming in, their sources shifting each time as Padme and Thrawn fired and then quickly changed positions to avoid the droids' counterattack. 1, 2, 3. The 7th and final shot split the air, and Anakin had the numbers. 3 of the 7 B-2s were of the normal type. The other 4, clustered together in the center of the droid formation, were the invulnerable ones. Ready! He shouted, bringing his hands and lightsaber back into view and igniting the weapon. One of the B-1s gave a squeak at the sight of the blue blade, and the entire front rank opened fire. Anakin deflected the shots, edging toward one of the support pillars, trying to draw as much of their attention toward him as he could. They would only have one shot at this. He reached the pillar and ducked behind it, and instantly ducked around the other side as blaster fire blasted chips of ceramic off the edge where he'd just disappeared. For a fatal half second, the B-1s had lost their target. That half second was all he needed. Stretching out with the force, he lifted the 9 helmets and hurled them at and above the 4 invulnerable B-2s. Another twitch, and the helmets turned over, dumping their cortosis fibers into a drifting, swirling cloud around the droids' heads. From across the room, the final shot of Thrawn's lightning gun shattered through the air. An instant later, the 4 B-2s were wreathed with a blazing, twisting, pulsating cloud of energy as the falling fibers connected to one another, disconnected, then reconnected, sending the energy through one another and into the threads embedded in the droid's armor. Thrawn had hoped that the sudden flood of energy would destroy the droids. Anakin hadn't been convinced that would happen, but he also hadn't cared. All he cared about was dazzling the B-2s long enough for him to get in before they recovered. Ducking around the pillar, he charged into the droid formation, slicing and shattering every B-1 in his path. He reached the 4 invulnerable B-2s and leapt into the air, fatally stabbing 2 of them as he arced past. He hit the floor, spun around as those first 2 toppled over, and jumped on the 3rd shoulders. 2 more stabs, and all 4 were down. He dropped to the floor again, to find that the rest of the droids, not as affected by the lightning storm as the Cortosis version, swung to the attack. Double vision. Bolts coming at chest, at head, at legs, at head, at legs, at chest. There were probably 20 of them in all. B-1s and B-2s. It didn't matter. Anakin was deep in the Force, turning and blocking and slashing and destroying. Dimly through his combat haze, He can sense other blaster fire cutting through the melee. Padme and Thrawn picking off the more vulnerable B1s where they could. The threat to Padme, the danger to the Republic, the murder of Duja. Double vision, bolts at chest and head. He continued his attack, a memory swirling up through the mist. The slaughter of the Sand People, who tortured and murdered his mother. Then it had been justice. Now it was war. Double vision, one bolt at chest. He deflected the solitary bolt, raised his lightsaber. Before he could attack, the last remaining B1 fell. Its torso burned through by the shot from Padme's S5. He looked around. They were down. Destroyed. All of them.
Are you all right?
Padme asked as she hurried over to him.
Sure,
Anakin said, breathing a little harder than he should have been. The result of fighting in full armor, no doubt.
Thrawn?
He asked, turning around.
Here,
Thrawn said, emerging from cover and walking over to them, Padme's ELG-3A blaster in his hand.
Do you still wish to destroy this place?
Anakin looked over at the row of Cortosis-laced clone armor, Dooku's ultimate plan for victory.
Absolutely, he said.
Then do so, Thrawn said. Ambassador Padme and I will check on the freighter.
Anakin looked questioningly at Padme.
Go ahead, she said. Dooku can have his battle droids now, for all the good they'll do him. But this...
Got it, Anakin said. Be careful. I'll be right out.
The armor might be impervious to his lightsaber, but the pillars holding up the ceiling and the floor above weren't. He started on the one farthest to the east, to seal off that entrance as quickly as possible, in case Solha tried to move the B2 out of the doorway. The pillar was stronger and better designed than he'd expected, and it took 6 cuts to finally bring it down. But when it fell spectacularly. Apparently the builders had never dreamed the pillar would collapse, and so had anchored it firmly to the ceiling, as well as to the floor. The result was that as the upper part of the pillar came down, it dragged a huge section of ceiling and roof down with it. Even with Jedi speed, Anakin was barely able to get out of the way in time. The debris was still bouncing, the dust thick in the air, when he started on the second pillar. By the time he reached the end of the chamber, he'd figured out the structural characteristics accurately enough to drop the last pillar squarely across the racks of clone trooper armor. He spent a moment peering through the clouds of dust at what was left of the chamber, surveying his handiwork and making sure there was no chance that anyone could ever retrieve enough of it to be of any use. Then, picking his way through the debris, he made his way back across the chamber to the easternmost door. Padme and Thrawn were outside, crouched behind a section of broken permacrete that seemed to have come from the East Wing's roof and top floor.
Is it done?
Padme asked, as Anakin dropped into a crouch beside them.
It was certainly loud enough.
Buried, crushed, and shattered,
Anakin confirmed. He tapped the pile of broken masonry in front of them.
What happened here?
Did you forget my ship's diversionary attack?
Thrawn asked.
I guess so,
Anakin said. Across the courtyard, 4 more B2s were standing guard at the foot of their freighter's ramp.
Let me guess. The other Serenians and the rest of the droids are inside?
Most likely, Thrawn said.
Solha said they were going to disable it, Padme said. They've probably had enough time to do that by now.
Probably,
Anakin agreed.
So what now?
We prepare to leave this world, Thrawn said. Ambassador Padme and I will go there.
He pointed to another pile of debris about halfway down the East Wing's wall.
You, General, will go to the spot where the shield generator used to be and engage the battle droids. Don't advance, but remain on that spot and merely defend yourself. We shall do the rest.
Anakin frowned. Only the one hatch on the freighter was open, and there was no way anyone would be able to sneak in past the B2s, no matter how engaged they were. Even if Thrawn and Padme got in, there was no easy way to unsabotage a ship in a timely manner without knowing exactly where and how it had been sabotaged in the first place.
May I ask how you're going to accomplish that?
There's no time, Thrawn said, peering up at the stars. Go, now.
Anakin took a deep breath.
Okay. Just remember what I said earlier about never letting you hear the end of it.
Bracing himself, he ignited his lightsaber and charged into the courtyard. The B-2 swiveled as they saw him, bringing their wrist blasters to bear.
Double vision. Bolts at chest, and head, at chest, and head.
He settled into his defense, letting the Force guide his hands. The battle intensified. He intensified his defense.
Anakin!
The voice seemed to come from the bottom of a well. He half-turned, handing his defense fully over to the Force. And to his amazement, found that while he'd been focused on the freighter and the B-2s, another small freighter had landed in the courtyard behind him. The ramp was open, and two men were lying dead or stunned on the ground beside it, where they'd apparently fallen off. Padme was waving to him from the top of the ramp. She'd caught his eye, nodded, and disappeared inside. Thrawn was standing beside the ramp, using it for protection as he fired Padme's S5 at the droids.
Inside, General, he called.
Once again, the Chiss had somehow pulled off some magic. Turning back to the droids, Anakin backed toward their new transport, continuing to block their attacks as he walked. He reached the ramp, waited for Thrawn to slip around behind him and into the ship, started to back up himself.
Hold it!
A voice called. Anakin risked a glance to the side. Padme's friend Lebjow was staggering toward him. R2-D2 clutched in his arms.
He got tangled, it's a broken plastoid,
he called. Anakin winced.
Take him inside, he said. Sorry, R2.
He waited until Lebjow and the little droid were safely through the hatchway, then backed up the ramp himself and stepped inside. He slapped the hatch control.
Go!
He shouted, and grabbed for a handhold as Padme rocketed the ship up and out, driving away at full power, twisting and jinking to avoid the B-2's fire. He waited until she straightened out, then headed forward. Thrawn was already seated in the co-pilot seat when he arrived.
I give up,
Anakin said as he got a grip on the back of Padme's chair.
What hat did you pull this one out of?
Don't you recognize it? Thrawn asked. It was one of the other ships at the Black Spire landing area.
Anakin frowned.
So? The Separatists we left on Batu helped themselves?
Exactly, Thrawn said. You may recall my comment that as long as they were a few hours behind us, all would be well.
So you expected them to come?
Of course, Thrawn said.
His tone the kind Obi-Wan used when he thought Anakin wasn't catching on fast enough.
They're soldiers. They wouldn't simply abandon their duty.
Of course not,
Anakin said sourly.
And you knew that they would land right where you and Padme could shoot up at them from behind the ramp because...
It was the nearest spot in the courtyard where they would be able to attack you from behind without risking a crossfire from their own droids.
Speaking of droids, was that Lebjow who just came in with R2?
Padme asked. Anakin nodded.
R2 was in trouble, and Lebjow got him out. There, up ahead! Is that the Cortosis mining area?
I don't know, Padme said. Seems to be in the right place, though.
It is, Thrawn confirmed.
Take us over there, Padme,
Anakin ordered.
We've got one more job to do.
I'd urge you to reconsider, Thrawn said. The presence of outsiders has already damaged this world enough.
Hey, we weren't the ones who did this to them,
Anakin countered.
We didn't start it, but we need to finish it.
What are you talking about?
Padme asked, sounding puzzled.
General Skywalker plans to destroy the mine, Thrawn said quietly. Again, I urge you.
There!
Anakin interrupted, pointing past Padme's shoulder at a tall, angled structure in the middle of the darkness. Its lights off, apparently deserted.
That must be the main shaft.
Anakin, are you sure this is a good idea?
Padme asked carefully. Anakin looked down at the top of her head, a flash of anger rippling through him.
You taking his side now?
He demanded.
I'm not taking anyone's side,
she protested.
I'm just trying to figure out if it's the smart thing to do. We've got the droids reprogrammed, remember? Why not let them waste the cortosis?
And what if they figure it out?
Anakin shot back.
Just because Thrawn said cortosis is rare doesn't mean they won't find another stash of it somewhere. Besides, we can't risk them making more clone armor.
There'll be miners down below,
Leb Jow murmured from the hatchway behind them. Anakin turned. Leb Jow's face was set in hard lines, his throat working.
We'll get them out first, he promised. Thrawn and I can do that. Or maybe you and Thrawn. I need to find and set some explosives.
For a long moment, Leb Jow gazed in silence at the building coming up on them. He looked down at the lightsaber on Anakin's belt and sighed.
Sure,
he said.
Not like we have a choice. Like we ever have any choice, really.
Good,
Anakin said, turning back around.
Looks like the main door's there on the south. Put us down beside it.
I hope you know what you're doing,
Padme murmured.
I do.
Reaching over the chair back, Anakin touched her shoulder.
Trust me.
Chapter 20
Lord Vader.
Thrawn's voice came through the blackness.
Come back, my lord.
Vader opened his eyes. To his mild surprise, he was still seated at the Chimera's helm.
I have not left, Admiral,
he said, putting some warning into his voice.
There is no need to return.
My apologies, my lord,
Thrawn said, inclining his head. Vader looked around. Thrawn had been wise enough to clear this section of the bridge, leaving no one to gawk at him, either in the crew pit or on the command walkway above them. Fortunately for Thrawn, even more fortunately for whoever that unlucky person might have been.
They are preparing the Chimera for attack,
Thrawn said, answering the unasked question.
I see,
Vader said, turning back to the helm readouts. They had arrived.
Yes,
Thrawn said.
The system has no name among the Chiss, nor has it any inhabited worlds. In the distance ahead lie two ships in the parking drift, most likely part of the Moon Transport Group. They are largely dormant, presumably awaiting the return of the ships from Akivja.
Is there a base?
There is nothing except the ships.
Perhaps the Grisks are nomads after all. We are undetected.
As yet, it appears so.
Thrawn hesitated.
I have a plan, my lord. It will require your participation, if you are willing.
Vader eyed him. At least this time the Chiss was asking instead of ordering or assuming.
Tell me your plan.
I wish you and your First Legion to go aboard the Darkhawk. You will intercept the Grisk ship. Go aboard.
No.
Thrawn seemed taken aback.
Excuse me, my lord.
I will not go aboard the ship. Commander Keymond and the First Legion are more than capable of handling a breach and rescue mission on their own.
Thrawn's lips compressed, just a bit, just briefly.
Yet, of all of us, my lord, you are the only one who can utilize the Force.
Does that bother you, Admiral? The creature you described on Atalon, it nearly defeated you because you could not understand it.
In the end, it was vanquished.
Was it?
Thrawn's lips compressed again.
This is hardly the time to discuss such matters.
It is the perfect time.
Vader waved a hand toward the viewport and the two Grisk ships in the distance.
You propose to take the Chimera against a people whom the Emperor has not yet declared as an enemy. You propose to do so without orders and in an action that benefits your people and not the Empire.
We have already discussed this. I maintain that it serves both.
Does it? We are on a mission for the Empire, Admiral. The mission is all that matters. Victory is all that matters.
The future of my people also matters.
No,
Vader said flatly.
Victory is the goal.
And not revenge?
Not revenge. Not even rescue.
For a moment, Thrawn was silent.
I understand. But I believe we can do both.
Vader stretched out with the Force. Again, Thrawn seemed so certain. So confident that he was in the right. Vader could stop him. Perhaps he should stop him. But he'd seen this confidence before. Long ago, in the Jedi. He too had had perfect assurance that what he was doing was both right and necessary. And once again, Vader found himself curious to see whether Thrawn could truly deliver everything he'd promised.
Very well. But understand this. All the strength of the creature you faced on Attilon pales in comparison with the power of the Emperor. Are you truly willing to risk his anger?
There is no risk,
Thrawn said evenly.
This mission will indeed meet with the Emperor's ultimate approval.
Perhaps,
Vader said. It might not, of course, but again the Chiss's quiet certainty was unmistakable. Whether Thrawn was ultimately proven right as to the Emperor's approval, there was no doubt that he himself believed such approval would be forthcoming.
Very well. I will permit this attack. But this is how it will be carried out.
Breach reports ready, Admiral,
Pharaoh said.
Her voice holds tension. Her body stands trepidation. She is not convinced the battle can or will be won.
All weapon systems standing by, ready to activate at your command.
Thank you, Commodore,
Thrawn said.
And the Darkhawk?
In position, sir.
Her voice holds a fresh layer of uncertainty. You do not believe we can achieve victory, Commodore? She hesitates, her expression holding reluctance.
I've seen the scanner report, sir, she said. I've counted the number of weapons emplacements. Each ship is nearly as big as we are.